there, Shopomaniacs. Welcome to a lit episode of the Shop Talk Show. What does that mean? I'm not a millennial. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is a not a millennial, Chris Coyer.
I am too, aren't I? I think the cutoff year is right around where I'm an 80 baby, so.
Oh, okay. We qualify, so we can say lit, we folks. Say lit. Welcome. Rebrand.
We are deep in the throes of our kind of digging a little mini series here, digging into the JavaScript ecosystem specifically of the world. And so last week we had on Jason Miller, right? Also from Google Land and his famous Preact library. We have a sort of a colleague, although I'm sure on a different team over at Google. This week we have Justin Finiani. Woo! You're at the Goog, right?
I'm at the Goog. I work with Jason quite a bit these days, even though he's on the East Coast and I'm in San Francisco. But I work on Chrome, on Web Components, and Polymer, and lit.html. So
that you both work on libraries in which that class X extends something.
No. Oh no, it's not functional.
Oh,
okay. What's the functional version? I'm confused.
There are functional versions of all this stuff.
Is there really?
We do use it.
Oh, gosh. We'll get into all that. But the main – I mean, we can talk about whatever. I'd love to just talk about the JavaScript ecosystem as a whole. But let's start with LitLand because that seems to be something you're heavily involved with, right? And so there's this thing called lit.html, but it has friends, and its friends are all under kind of the Polymer brand. So I don't want to screw this up. So maybe you could start with wherever makes sense there and tell us what these things are and what they mean.
Yeah, well, starting with Polymer kind of makes sense because that's where a lot of this work started. But Polymer's kind of evolved. So it started as a library to help you implement web components yourself. And it has evolved more into an umbrella project. And so we try to refer to it as the Polymer project now, which includes lit.html and lit.element and things like the PWA starter kit. And then we have the Polymer library that some people sometimes call Polymer Classic. So we're trying to expand the brand to cover more projects that we have.
Okay, interesting. And has lit become a big part of it, or is it a tiny little buddy part of it? Or
it's basically the centerpiece of everything we're doing now.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a big change in how we approach creating DOM and doing templating, and we're all in on it now.
So my understanding of it was is probably pretty basic. I don't have any like production sites using it or anything. But at once, you know, when ES6 became cool and template literals became a thing that we were using, it seemed really cool to be like, wow, this is templating. I mean, that's probably the reason why that feature exists at all in JavaScript. I can write a little chunk of HTML so easily inside of template literals. And so maybe I'll start doing that a little bit here and there. But, you know, that concept isn't, you know, that's not, you know, like we already have JSX if we're writing in some other library. So it's not particularly helpful if we're already using a library in which that's the case. So it's more like if I'm in kind of vanilla JavaScript land and stuff, still pretty useful though. And then we're like, well, but you know, what's really nice about these other libraries like Vue and whatever that use these virtual DOM situations is that the virtual DOM is so efficient, right? If I change one little span and I literally open the DevTools and watch, and I only change data that will change that span and not like the parents of parents of parents that it's within, only that little span changes. That looks so efficient and so cool, and it feels so fast in the browser. That would be nice. But now if I'm writing my template literal piece of templated code, and I need to re-render it while I'm inner HTMLing the whole thing or whatever, it's like it's going to update a lot. And so along comes this library lit that looks like it can do that. It looks like virtual DOM diffing, but it's not. You get the efficiency without it. Is that the core of it, or is that just a side benefit? Or
I mean, that really is the core of it. I mean, there's a lot to unpack in the thing you just said, which is what most people's understanding of kind of ES6 and template literals are. There's a lot of hidden power there that's not obvious at first, because most people are exposed to, you know, just plain template literals, not tagged template literals. So you have the backticks and you have the expressions and you're like, oh, this is like, you know, Python string interpolation. But, you know, when you put a tag in front of a template literal, which is just the little identifier in front of the first backtick, it becomes so much more than string interpolation. so that that tag is a function. It gets invoked, but it gets invoked with these objects that kind of give it special powers that, that no other JavaScript construct has.
Really? I always thought it was just like a nice little sugar for like take this string and pass it to this function, which it does, but it does it even more than that.
It does, but the it turns out template literal is like a subtly meaningful name here. Like the literal part matters a lot. It's not just a string that gets passed to the function. It's a literal. And when a JavaScript parser parses a literal, it puts that in a special place and it's, you know, interned and you know, there's a reference to this literal, right? So the strings array, the literal parts of the template literal that get passed to the tag function, that array is the same object every single time you invoke that expression. And so we take advantage of this by basically we have to do some setup work to create an HTML template from the lit template, and we only want to do that once, the first time you render. And so we do that by using the template string itself as a key into a map, a cache. Right, so we can do the setup work, create a template, remember where the dynamic parts are, and then only do that the first time we ever see a template. So every other time that you update something or render a new instance of a component, it's reusing that same work we already did.
Cool.
Wow. So like, I'm like, when you say a template in HTML, you mean like literally open bracket template, close bracket, all my stuff goes here, close template tag. Wow. Okay. So.
And a lot of people don't know about that element either because it's not used by, you know, frameworks like React.
It is a little, you see it in Vue, but even then it's kind of like it's Vue's version of it, right?
Yeah, which I think is more or less kind of has the same semantics. I mean, the magical part about template is that the contents of it are moved out of the main DOM and into like an inert document fragment. So if you put scripts or images or styles inside of a template, they won't
load. Oh, they don't trigger the preloader or whatever? That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what the preloader does, but they don't, like a style inside of a template won't apply to the page.
Right.
Wow.
It's like
I did not know that, actually. So let's take a detour and instead of talking specifically about lit, talk about just web components, period, because Polymer and lit care very much about that, right? That like you don't have to, like they're kind of, they help along the idea of native web components. I could today, like if I wanted to play with web components, I can play with web components with no libraries at all. Right, I can write class Chris's component extends HTML element or whatever, and I've kind of created a class thing of, I know that we mentioned class in the thing, and you're like, there's a functional equivalent, but let's say it's a class. I can kind of invent a web component with no libraries at all, right?
Yeah. I mean, web components are just part of the platform, and so HTML element is just something you can extend. The shape of the component kind of API is very similar to most frameworks. You have kind of a life cycle. So you have when your element's created, you can implement the constructor. You can tell when you're connected or disconnected from the tree. So it's pretty similar to most things out there, except for that it's just built in. And then the other...
How can that not be appealing to people on some level? You know, you're like what's the use case for this? Well, the use case is every React component that's ever been written. It's like, it kind of, and I know they're different, but it's like, no wonder that's at least a little appealing, is that there's this like library-free version of components that's possible. And I know there's plenty of stuff that web components don't give you that those libraries do. You know, the industry has decided in a way that these frameworks offer them what they want and people are using the hell out of them. But it's kind of cool that the web component, the native technologies moved along, and then maybe they're starting to be like little smaller libraries to append what web components are able to do. Is that how Lit thinks of itself as, why don't you use regular web components and we'll help you, I don't know, make them better, more efficient in some way?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's where Lit comes in. Lit's very focused. You know, it just does templating. Or I should say lit.html, because we also have lit.element, which is a web component base class that kind of glues lit.html and web components together.
I'm a little unclear on that myself. So lit.html is just like little functions that you can call for re-rendering and stuff, but that doesn't help you construct an actual web component, right? Like you need lit.element for that. And then if you're using lit.element, no longer are you extending the native HTML element, you extend lit.element. So
lit element itself extends HTML element. So it's just an intermediate, you know, subclass of HTML element or superclass of your element. So you still extend HTML element.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So it's not, I wonder about that moment though. Like, even though it does that internally, you've kind of bought in now, like now you're in framework land.
I mean, I would really hesitate to call it a framework. I mean, I know people get kind of, they try to figure out what exactly you mean, but it, you know, lit element adds some conveniences for essentially defining what is still a vanilla HTML element, right? From the outside, you still just have properties and you still can set attributes and, you know, listen for events. It's an element in every shape and form. It's just that you use this class to help you implement it.
Is this kind of the revival of sugar libraries? Semantic sugar? This feels good.
I hope so, because, you know, the nice thing about opinionated sugar is that when done right, it's optional and it's lightweight. And so you can have a bunch of people choose the sugar that they like or none at all when they implement their components. But, you know, people don't have to agree on the sugar. It's all inside their implementation, and these things still interop because of web components.
So one thing that is always pitched about web components is it's interoperable. So when I write my Vue app, you know, and there's like, oh, I need a map, but that map is written in React or Angular, I can just, you know, install that and it should work. Like, this is a future where everything's on web components. I mean, but does it, I guess in my brain, I don't really see it working that way. So what has to happen, you know, to making, like, I just don't see like me dropping an Angular component in is going to be super easy and lightweight. Like, it seems like it's going to bring all of Angular and all of, you know, I don't know, like, so much stuff, you know. So how do we get to that future where I can just seamlessly kind of move between component or like frameworks?
Well, I mean, part of the problem is that the frameworks have been heavyweight in the past, right? So that's got to come down. We have to ship less JavaScript to browsers. As frameworks get smaller, the incremental cost of, you know, adding one to a page becomes less. And I think that, you know, it might not be ideal or common to mix, you know, a ton of different libraries together that do essentially the same thing on the same page. But one thing that even having the ability unlocks is that, you know, especially like enterprises or long-lived projects or multiple project kind of organizations, that they don't get kind of stuck because they've bought into a framework and have no way besides rewriting the entire application to move to something different. And we've already seen this play out really nicely with Polymer, the library, and lit element, is that they interop on the same page. And, you know, we have people who have a Polymer application and they want to start using lit element and they just can't. They don't have to configure anything different or write wrapper classes or rewrite the whole app. And this gives them an incremental evolution path that, you know, really didn't exist for frameworks, even within the same framework. I mean, Angular had, you know, huge kind of issues to deal with in the Angular JS or Angular 1 to Angular 2 transition. And if that had been, you know, just different kind of opinions and extensions of web components, people would have been able to mix and match and incrementally migrate to Angular 2.
So that might be a future of JavaScript, is to be like, can you libraries all agree that there already is a component language? Bring your fancy whatever you want to do to it, instead of everybody re-implementing their own idea of what a component is. I mean, that seems highly unlikely, but maybe that would be cool.
I mean, I'm optimistic. I have to be in this, you know, to be fighting this battle. But I think it can happen. I don't know if it will always come from the existing frameworks, or whether or not there will be kind of new libraries that offer, you know, the advantages of the frameworks, you know, and then some because they're on top of web components. I mean, you said earlier, like, you know, why would anybody not want this? And that's kind of the way I look at it, is, you know, the web platform, you know, evolved into an application platform kind of by accident, right? And like every application platform out there, like Android, Windows, iOS, you know, they all have a component model. And you say, like, should the web as an application platform have its own component model? And the answer, like, to me is, like, of course. Like, why why wouldn't you want it to have that?
Yeah, the whole world, if there's one thing we all agree on, it's that the components, and this is true of designers and developers, which is we've all agreed that designing components is how we want to build stuff now and forever.
Yeah, I think a lot of the problem comes down to kind of misconceptions about what web components are. I think some people expect them to be as high level as what a framework would give you, and so have all the conveniences, when really they're super low level. Like, all custom elements do is let you define a new tag and then kind of notify you when the tag has been added to the page. Like, that's it. It's not, you know, a lot of convenience or sugar there. And so people look at documentation like on MDN, and, you know, MDN isn't going to go, web components, okay, step one, install lit HTML, right? They're going to go, web components, here's an attribute change callback, and, you know, here's how to render some DOM. And unfortunately, the platform has no great way to render a lot of DOM, right? We have inner HTML, we have clone node. They're really low level themselves. So you see a raw web components, an example, and you go, wow, this is really imperative, stateful, mutation heavy code, and that's not what I want to write. And so you don't see the layer that puts that, you know, declarative sugar on top until you get to something like lit. But you might not, you might never ever get there. You might look at the MDM docs and then say, this is not what I want. So that's a challenge we have, I think.
I think I experienced this myself when I think a couple of years ago I said I was going to dive into web components and just try to figure it all out. Like, how can I start using this in my code? I realized the low level web component like isn't what you want. You kind of need something around it, like Polymer, which that was kind of the only, I guess there's a couple other frameworks, right? Like Skate and other things that kind of do
Skate
web components.
Skate and Stencil now, yeah.
Stencil, yeah. And then... and so I was like, okay, I'll use those, or maybe I'll look at those. But, you know, Polymer was kind of the big one because it had the Google backing. But then I jumped into Polymer and I was just like, this is a lot of action. There's like Iron Fist components and things like that. I don't know what these mean, you know? This is so much to learn, you know? And so I felt like I was hopping into Polymer. I was like 2 years behind the conversation of what actually happens when you build a Polymer app. And so... I guess I'm to say, I think I'm happy like lit element and lit HTML are coming out of this because this seems like a point that I can use in my code and my vanilla-ish JavaScript tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, Polymer, the library in the early versions, you know, there were a lot of things that I think were kind of hindering it. You know, one was it was an overloaded term even then. So we had all these elements that were part of the Polymer Elements projects. Some of them were iron, which was supposed to reference core, and some of them were paper, which was supposed to be material design. And then Polymer would also be confused with the polyfills for web components themselves. And so when you jumped into this world, you saw a lot of stuff. On top of that, we were using HTML imports, which is one of the original web component standards that didn't survive. And so it wasn't clear how you would even use Polymer elements inside of vanilla JavaScript. Like, you couldn't import an HTML file into JavaScript. And we were on Bower for a while, right? So, you know, there was a lot kind of that wasn't aligned well enough with kind of mainstream JavaScript first NPM centric, you know, ecosystem. So, you know, not only is lit HTML a little more focused, but we also kind of learned to go to the mainstream ecosystem places and then kind of make smaller, more focused libraries that you could glue together. So it's a big change.
Seems like there's almost more excitement about anything with lit in the name than Polymer in a way. It's almost like you need a reboot on the Polymer brand situation.
I mean, this is why we're trying to, you know, focus on the Polymer project, which makes these, you know, these libraries. Yeah, I mean, some people have, you know, some connotations with the Polymer library that are unfortunate. I think it's a misunderstanding in a lot of ways. But, you know, the future is bigger than the past, and I think most people will be excited about the things we actually build now.
Because I think that misconception definitely exists. I mean, I see it on Twitter, of course. People are like, you know, web components sucks. I'm not going to use Polymer, you know, and they kind of equate those two together like they're the same thing. But they were different, you know. The polymer was just the abstraction over web components.
And this is why we're always happy to help promote other web components-based libraries out there. Because we don't have to compete, you know, with as much like total warfare, right? Like the same page can contain a skate element and a stencil element and a lit element and probably be lighter weight than, you know, the mainstream frameworks. So we're really, we kind of... You know, what is it, cooperation? You know, we cooperate a little bit on mindshare for people already in the web components universe, I think. But more, we're all interested in growing the web components pie. So, you know, that's a lot different than what people are used to with frameworks. We have to use one or the other. And so I want people to know that, you know, web components is not just polymer and that there's these other options out there.
I think that... The shadow DOM thing to some people could and should be a little bit exciting because it's like real true style encapsulation that is not possible with the other frameworks unless they choose to go down a shadow DOM like route, which I don't think I've seen yet. But it's like having a little iframe on your page. Like the styles cannot escape from it. It's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing, and especially, you know, Chrome 73 is going to make native Shadow DOM even more amazing because it's shipping constructible style sheets and CSS shadow parts. But once you have a real encapsulated scope for your styles, you know, all kinds of things that are possible or at least practical that weren't before, right? Like you can have really simple selectors. You can use just a tag name selector like P, and you would never want to do that. Right, without shadow root. You can use IDs again because IDs are scoped to the shadow root too. So you can start writing a lot less
CSS. I've heard this idea of, you know, you don't even name the root. You just freaking call it host or whatever. You don't have to even think of a name for this, for the top level of the component at least, because it doesn't matter. It's just the root. You know?
Yeah.
It's BEM without the B. It's just M.
No, Dave, yeah. You need to be rich from that. That's an incredible
thing. I know. Why am I not rich right now?
You can confuse everybody by referring to M's and CSS as the thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's got a branding problem. We're workshopping it still, but hem, host element modifier. Got it. Okay, we're rolling forward.
Nice.
2019, year of hem. Okay.
I got it. I'm tweeting this right after we're done. Yeah. Yeah, host is amazing. It's like completely unambiguous. It can't point to the wrong element ever, right? Colon host the selector.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to put a wrapper element around your contents. I mean,
does this have advantages too? Kind of the same template advantages, against say, technology which shall not be named or else we're going to catch it in the Twitter feeds. But a certain technology that tries to put a styling language inside a scripting language, what, you know, does like these kind of using host and in these styles in our template, does that get us any gains like cacheable or anything like that?
In some ways, definitely. So, you know, having a style scope in less selectors and simpler selectors means the browser has less work to do when it goes to do style resolution. But an even bigger gain is from something like constructible style sheets. So up until just about now, we've been recommending that people just put like a style tag in line with their template. And as that style tag gets written to the shadow root, it's scoped. But it might seem that that's costly because you have all these style tags now on your page where you used to have one. And what browsers have been doing is deduplicating those style tags based on their contents. So it'll try to only parse and make one style sheet for all of them. But constructible style sheets make that explicit. So now we have this in lit element, you specify your styles as a static property on the class. And we create a style sheet and parse that once, and then we just attach that style sheet to every shadow DOM. And it's just a JavaScript reference. The browser doesn't even have to try to figure out to deduplicate it. And the Chrome engineers who implemented this told us they were seeing, you know, close to 30% improvement on some of the list benchmarks that had a lot of elements. So now that we're starting to add a few more features on top of Shadow Root, the benefits are getting even bigger.
I'm curious about the authoring of that, you know, in a way though, like what is the, seems like people love Vue because there's just a style tag in every component and that's where your styles go. What a clean, nice authoring experience that is, you know? Or in ReactLand, you pick from this landscape of styling tools to go with your components or whatever. Or you use CSS modules, which is so nice. It's just a straight up CSS file that just lives alongside the component. Is that if you're authoring a lit element and you want to style it, what's the authoring experience like? Do I write a CSS file in my project that just lives right next to where I'm defining the component? Or?
So if you want to do something with no build step, what we have is you just write static styles equals, and then we have a CSS template tag that's very similar to the HTML template tag for lit element. And then you just write your CSS right inside the backticks right there. And then we take that and we do the most optimal thing we can depending on browser support. So that tends to work well because IDEs have gotten really good at, you know, syntax highlighting and giving you IntelliSense and all that on template literals that are tagged. So we keep the tag simple, CSS, yeah. HTML, SVG.
So at worst, you got to install a little VS Code plugin that recognizes it or something, but it might not even need that.
Right. Yeah. Atom does this automatically. Mm. So from there, things can get more interesting. So some people have written Babel transforms or rollup plugins that will help translate a CSS file into a JavaScript module that just exports this tagged string. So now you can write the CSS externally. And then in the magical future, we have a proposal for native CSS modules where you can just import a CSS file with JavaScript import syntax. And what it will give you is a stylesheet object. And this will be deduplicated from everybody who imports the same file. And then you can use constructible stylesheets just to append that to the document or the shadow root. So that's where you get to no build step, optimal performance, separate files. So you're,
does it make a network request for that file when it grabs it that first time? Probably, but big deal, right?
Yeah, but you know, you presume the bundlers will support that kind of thing, and then figure out the optimal bundling strategy there. Or in the future, we'll have web packaging, which will take care of that.
Cool. So what are like Lit's best friends in a way? Like what you get out of Lit or Lit Element is like a, you know, like a nice web component structure, sugar and stuff. But you don't, what, and then you get templating for sure, right? And you get like efficient mm-hmm. re-rendering for sure. And probably like nice, I don't even know what you get. Maybe nice, you know, hey, component did mount or whatever. I don't know if there's some native version of that. But what you don't get, which is certainly why some people choose React, is like, I need state management. Like even Lit is telling me like, hey, well, when there's new data, we'll re-render that super efficiently. Well, where does that new data come from? Is there some kind of like internal state tool of Lit, or does Lit on purpose stay away from the concept of state, or can I bring along a state management friend?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you're right there that Lit tries to basically stay away from that topic and say, bring your own. So very much like React does in a lot of ways, we, you know, support top-down unidirectional data flow. And if you have new data, you set a property and that triggers the update pipeline and we re-render. How you set that data and how you determine that you need data to be set is up to you. So a component could manage its state locally if it's trying to be like very independent and usable just in a page with no framework. Or we definitely have a lot of people using Redux and tools like that. And, you know, those things have been written for a world that weren't necessarily like DOM oriented. So you still use, if you use Redux, you use it in the same way that you have done. You have a dispatcher and you fire the dispatcher and all that. But one nice thing about kind of being close to the DOM is that you can do some of these patterns without any libraries. Like the thing I recommend people do is when they have a component that changes some data is they just fire a custom DOM event. And that event will go all the way up the tree, and then in your app or whoever owns the main data for the page, they just catch that event, they mutate the data, and they set it back down, and then the page re-renders.
Okay,
so you can kind of get Redux. You can get Redux for free in a way.
So because there's native DOM events like scroll and click, but there's no reason I can't fake one called Chris Click and listen for it, right?
Or even better, you don't name it Chris Click. you know, you name it semantically over what that button meant.
Right.
So like delete Chris.
Sure.
And never do that. But
okay.
Promote Chris could be an event that a button.
And I don't have to ask permission or even register that event, right? I just fire it and something else can listen for it.
Yeah. And in a component, you just go this dot dispatch event. Because the component is an element, you have all the element APIs at your disposal.
So isn't that's part of the rub, isn't it? That we get a bunch of stuff for free because it's the real, we're not faking anything. It's just part of reality in the browser.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefit from doing less, I think. Part of that is not reinventing what the browser already has there.
So is there starting to be like, let's say, you know, okay, what do lit HTML tabs look like? Well, we know we need one piece of state in it. Which tab is active? So people could write this any number of ways, right? You almost don't want to get involved with this. You don't want to make iron tabs anymore for lit because it's a little too opinionated. Maybe you just want to write tabs. Just do whatever you want.
I mean, yes to both kind of things there. One of the things that brought a lot of people to Polymer was the fact that we had these elements ready to go. And we had kind of at the time, you know, the canonical material design element set. So we're working on a new material design element set called Material Web Components.
That's a good name. Paper, not so much. I mean, whatever. But you know, you had confusion, right? Like paper meant material design. Well, just call it material design then.
I know. I mean, an earlier name for material design internal to Google had paper in the name.
So there you go.
Right, and paper is a material.
I see.
That's where this came from.
If you dug in, it made sense.
Yeah. It's much clearer if you say material web components. People will know what you mean.
So if there's a material web component that comes out, I'm sure this appeals to a lot of people. I mean, using somebody else's design system is all the rage. So, I mean, is it just... So people can just start dropping this in their projects soon?
They're actually published in pre-release form. And it's kind of an interesting project the way this works is that the material design team wants to make kind of the canonical DOM structure and styles and behavior for all the implementations. So they implemented this very, very agnostic system where they have these little adapters that you can wrap up in your framework. And then we're wrapping that up in web components. So it's kind of all the same styling, so they all look the same. But it's an interesting problem there because they want to be able to support all frameworks, and we're also like, hey, web components support all frameworks. Mostly, kind of React has some troubles. While we're building these web components, we're also hoping that the web components themselves can be the version that everybody uses. And so we're trying to smooth out any remaining rough edges. So the material web components are using lit element. It's an implementation detail, but we are doing things like trying to work with, like make a React wrapper that will automatically vend a React library out of the web component library. So we're going to try to make these things more universal than just say, like, if you're using lit, these are the ones you use. We're going to try to say, no matter what framework you're using, these are the material web components to use.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Netlify. Earlier this month, Chris Coyer wanted to build a website to track upcoming conferences for front-end developers just like yourself. He'd built something like this previously using forms for submissions and basically manually editing a blog. But this is 2019, so he wanted to do something a little more interesting. He used GitHub to host the code, which allows anyone with a free GitHub account to collaborate via a pull request. He built the site with 11D. He then turned to Netlify to host the site because Netlify makes it incredibly easy to do. He connected the GitHub repo to Netlify, told Netlify how to build it and where to find the files, and now whenever he pushes to the master branch or accepts a pull request into master, the site automatically rebuilds and deploys in seconds. You can check out the completed version of the site at conferences.css-tricks.com, which has a link to the GitHub repo where you can contribute with a pull request of your own. And be sure to check out netlify.com for information on how to build, deploy, and manage your next web project today. Thanks again to Netlify for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Where do you think Like, why doesn't Web Components have 100% adoption by all popular frameworks right now? And like, what would it take to get there? Or what concerns are there from those, we'll call them companies? how do we get to this future where everything's a web component?
There are a couple of things that need to happen, I think. So one is some technical stuff. You know, the web components having like a registry where you have to give them a tag name. And, you know, the way it integrates with HTML, it puts some constraints on web components that don't exist with pure JavaScript component systems. And so we have some proposals out for doing things like scope custom element registries, meaning that you can define your custom element tags for just a portion of the page, and you don't get this kind of contention where you can't register a tag name twice in a page. This is going to be really important for enterprise customers and systems with plugins like IDEs. So there's a few remaining things to kind of tick off that are not usually a problem, but people can point to them and say, okay, web components have this issue here, therefore we won't use them. Server-side rendering is another one of these, and that's what we're working on right now. Is like, you know, a lot of web components libraries are small and fast enough that you don't actually need server-side rendering to be fast, but a lot of people have a hard requirement. We want server-side rendering. And because Shadow DOM is not representable in markup, this is a bit of a tricky problem to solve.
That's kind of something we lost. I guess from Polymer 2 to Polymer 3, went over to Lit Element, right? And went from like a more HTML declarative to like an all in JS flavor. Is that safe? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
And so like moving over to all in JS, we've kind of lost the server side thing, unless you do some kind of whatever, like render to string or something.
Well, Polymer, I mean, server-side rendering is funny because it means different things. I mean, classic server-side rendering like PHP, web components are actually amazingly suited to that, like no other framework is, right? Because you can just put tag names in your server-generated markup and they just work. They'll as long as you have the script tag that includes the element definition, they'll just boot up on the page and there you have components.
Oh, so like if I was running a wiki, some kind of doc site that needed a new header or something. I'm just kidding.
Just putting it out there. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't catch that drama. Is there something weird about MDN having a React header or something? Is that what people are mad about?
Yeah, you know, there was a little too much kind of heated conversation there. You know, basically
there are a lot of misstatements all around.
Yeah, so I
didn't catch any of it. Oh, I'm sad.
Oh, it's typical Twitter drama. It's not really necessary.
Okay, forget it then. We'll talk about
it. But we're friends with MDN, and you know, I mean, the thing is, like, choosing another framework or library is totally fine. We just, you know, want people to know that web components are well supported in Firefox and Safari. Taking a step back, you know, to this use case of wikis and content management systems or Markdown, you know, markup already works in these systems. And so web components are really, really suited for them. Like sometimes you'll see people like, hey, I created a new flavor of Markdown that also supports React or Vue or something. And you're like, well, I created an old flavor of Markdown that supports custom elements because Markdown supports HTML. Yeah, so that kind of server-side rendering has been well supported from the beginning. What isn't supported is the deep server-side rendering, where you want to render the guts and the implementation details of a component to a page. And it is possible. Polymer didn't support it, so that's not something we lost with Lit Element. But yeah, what we're going to do is, you know, something similar to what all the frameworks do for server-side rendering now is kind of execute the component code in Node and then capture the results and stream them to the browser and then rehydrate. So it's possible. It just requires a bit of work, and we're doing that. So I think once we knock down those technical problems, then what's left is kind of it's more political. It's like this partisan landscape that JavaScript tends to have where everybody's, you know, claiming their, yeah.
You don't say. Okay.
So that, you know, I don't know how you solve that or if you solve that. You know, maybe there's other areas where people stopped fighting over something that should be table stakes that we could look to see if it ever happens.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always, I mean, you're on the Chrome team, Chrome side of things, but there's like a heavy argument for performance. Like, that's good for users. I think we can all agree, but then, you know, there's kind of a straw man that gets elevated. Like, well, what if users are fine to wait an hour and a half for my pet bundle and but they get a richer experience, you know? And it's just like, and we can't agree on anything. So there's no progress, right?
Or why not both? A rich experience that's fast. You know, on the Chrome side, we have people very concerned with this performance issue because it doesn't mean that people don't do things. It means they don't do it with the web. And, you know, we want people to be able to use the web and take advantage of its unique features, you know, like drive-by, you know, URLs using an app without installing it. So we do care that people ship less JavaScript. Web components can help there. You know, but yeah, I think in terms of the political landscape, you know, part of this makes me sad that we have some of the very best web and JavaScript engineers, you know, in these separate teams all working on competing stuff when, like, it would be better for the world if we could all move up the stack a bit and work on, you know, different problems and solve them. Right. So I hope that eventually we do kind of come down to we have a component model, let's use that and move on to more interesting things to solve.
So just because I've seen you on the threads on the GitHubs, what can we talk about the future of web components? Because I think there's two kind of specs out there, proposals that are kind of interesting. There's the one from Apple for like true like template interpolation, like for loops and things like that, and if statements in a template. And then there's the single file component from, I guess it's Microsoft, on the Microsoft Blink team. Can you comment on any of those? Like, what do you think those are something we're going to have here in 2019-ish?
Yeah, happy to. So first, the first proposal you referenced from Apple was called template instantiation.
Instantiation. Sorry, yeah. That's a big word. I don't know.
Template making. All right.
Template.
Yeah, that proposal actually has several layers to it. So the thing you talked about with like for loops and ifs is like a super high layer that is not even really being discussed right now. The core of this is that the DOM doesn't have a way that it can recommend and make easy to say, like, here's how to create a bunch of DOM and update it later, right? You could, like, imperatively create DOM and say, here's a reference to the span I need to update. Or you could clone a template, but then you'd have to, like, crawl into the template to find the parts you want to update. So template instantiation is all about, you know, how can we create a bunch of DOM, mark certain parts of it as dynamic, and then update those dynamic parts later. So really all it is kind of adding a new thing to the DOM that's similar to a range that we're calling a part right now. And it just points to some location to the DOM and lets you update it, but it can be cloned along with the DOM that it points to, which range can't be. So you could create a template, put some ranges in it, or some parts in it that say where you're going to put data. And then when you clone the template, you can just get back those parts and set the data. So this, you know, has a proposal from Apple. You know, people are experimenting with it now. We're writing polyfills. It's essentially the core operation that lit.html does. And the nice thing here is we're going to be able to get smaller templating libraries. Lit.html should hopefully drop to under 1K if it was based on this standard. And then later layers could add syntax so that you can do some of this stuff with no libraries. So that's a very exciting area, I think. The next thing you mentioned was HTML modules. Yeah. So Microsoft has really taken the lead on this area here, and they actually have code that they've written against Chromium to implement HTML modules. And the way we think about this is that, you know, the web deals with three main file types, JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. And we really think you should be able to just import any of those file types into JavaScript. And so an HTML module would just be, you know, an HTML file that you can import into JavaScript, and it might have your templates in it. It might be a single file component like you would do with Vue. And so you just want to be able to import that, get a reference to the nodes inside of it, maybe execute some script if you have a single file component.
Okay, that's interesting. It's taken me a while to even understand this. It's been on your hot list for years, I feel like, and I feel like I'm way behind.
My next question is, when can I do it in HTML? Because I'm still mad about it. But So
it's because if you want to write a template now, you either got to just write it somewhere else on your page in your HTML that's just sitting there and then reference it, or you need to write it in the JavaScript. With imports, you could write it in a separate file. That's what's missing now.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, one way to look at these, also along with CSS modules and constructible style sheets and part, is we're really just like finishing the story around these things. Like, template is a useful tag, kind of, except for that you just identified the Achilles heel there, is that like, okay, where do I put my templates? Right? Like, it has a useful primitive operation, but, you know, it's not exposed to where people need them. And so HTML modules and template instantiation both help finish the story around templates. And then once they do, I think, you know, we'll see a lot more people use templates in useful ways.
Oh, I'm still like, why is my brain not processing this correctly? Can't you like XHR for a chunk of template? Is that not okay? Is that not good enough?
You can do that, but part of the problem there is that you've now stepped outside of your dependency graph for your JavaScript modules, right? So, you know, can bundlers see that this file is a dependency?
Oh, okay.
Can the pre-scanners on the browser see that, you know? So the import graph is really important for tooling to make a performant app.
I see. That helps.
Also, you know, the nice thing about imports is by the time your code runs, you know you've loaded all your imports. So you don't have to worry about, am I in a state where my code is running but I haven't loaded my template yet?
It works with the spirit of the component, whereas if you're going to fetch a thing that you're on your own, then you got to wait for the promise and just deal with it all yourself or whatever.
Right, and we'd really like to reduce the number of weird states that your app can be in. So just, you know, once my dependencies are loaded, then I'm ready to go.
So my other question there, with HTML imports gone and now it looks like we're importing HTML into JavaScript, like, what's the future? Am I ever going to write an HTML file again, or is it all in JS from here on out?
There's a lot of futures. So we'll see what happens. But I think this goes back to the idea of sugar and opinion and it being okay to have different opinions. I think, you know, people who really like Polymer Classic and Vue single file components, they'll now be able to do that without build tools, you know, just native in the browser. And their work will be usable by people writing in JavaScript. So it's going to build this bridge and people will be able to do what they want there. There's another future which I'm particularly interested in, but we got to get all this stuff settled first, where we reduce the need to have JavaScript at all. So imagine like Wikipedia.
Go on.
So imagine you have Wikipedia and you would like to componentize Wikipedia because, you know, they have these little sidebars and menus and tables and stuff that they want to repeat, and they're useful components. But you also don't want to require JavaScript just to be able to render a Wikipedia page. So one thing you could do with HTML modules is if we extend web components again to have declarative web components. So you might have an HTML tag that says define component, and inside that you would have a template using template instantiation, the high-level one with the syntax. Then you could define a component that can actually kind of stamp out some data that came from children or attributes. And you could do that with no JavaScript. And so now you could take something like Wikipedia, define some declarative components, and it runs in a browser without JavaScript. It's easily server-side renderable, and, you know, you can crawl it and kind of understand what the page should look like when it's fully, you know, they'd be more like macros. So that's a future, I think, where we can get, you know, target really low-level devices, publishing systems, and non-JavaScript. And I hope we can get there.
Well, I like that one. Ready for that one.
Yeah. No JavaScript is faster than any JavaScript.
No JavaScript, less build tools, please.
Well, under the browsers of today, right? Unless browsers fundamentally change how they digest these things.
But I think this single file component thing, I've been getting into Vue and I really like it quite a bit, you know, and actually I don't know how Vue feels about lit HTML, but Vue has a template function in their classes that works a lot like React's render, you know, so it's very similar to this, and the delta between like lit element and a and how you like kind of write out a what you would call a view element or a view component is very small. So I wonder if
what's the story behind like loops, like, you know, in what in Vue don't you go like V4 or whatever, and in React you just write a little map and you return crap in it. Is Lit have a little looper duper?
I mean, Lit is very, very much like JSX. So if you want to do a loop, you just use JavaScript. So you can do array.map. Lit.html has things called directives, which are little functions that customize how an expression works. And so we have a repeat directive, which does all the kind of intelligent moving of DOM. So there are a number of different ways to do it. You can build up, you know, the contents with a for loop and then inject them into the template later. But it's all just JavaScript at the end. Yeah, I mean, one thing, it is very different from Polymer, which was more like Vue, where you wrote your templates in HTML. And, you know, personally, I like writing them in JavaScript because, you know, when I run a write in expression, I don't want to think about what the expression language of my template system is, right? I don't want to learn a separate language. I just want to use JavaScript. And my data is in JavaScript. So if I need to mutate my data a little bit for the view, I can just do it right there. So personally, I prefer the lit HTML approach, but I know a lot of people like writing their HTML in .html files. And so Vue is great for that. We're working on some dialects of lit HTML that will also let you write the templates in HTML. But I hope things like HTML modules will mean that, you know, you don't have to be dogmatic about this. People can use the style that they like and still vend their components to, you know, anybody else.
Yeah. When there are times in Vue where it's like, okay, this one requires brackets, or this one you don't actually in this context, if you use like a, you know, a colon, and you're just, it's a little confusing. I mean, it's good, but it works, I guess is what I should say. But it can be confusing because you don't know the like, am I in the JavaScript context here? Am I just in a template context? So,
We're talking really high level, but I have another little low level one that would help me understand a little bit. I think we teased a little bit in the pre-show that there's, I don't know, the way I helped me understand what a web component was at all was when I saw that, like, oh, I get it, that a native web component is like class my component extends HTML element, and I'm used to seeing that because that's a format that we use in our main React project at work, and I can see that lit element offers that same syntax, and like, oh, I get it, it's this class syntax and it extends a thing and you use it and it's great, and I you know, it made it sink in for me. There's this wider sentiment that classes are not for everybody. I don't even get it really, but it's like, oh, this is hard in classes and they're not as efficient because they can't be compressed as well. I don't know what all the talking points are exactly, but like, if that sinks into everybody's mind in the whole world, is that, okay, we got classes, but we hate them now, so we're not going to write them that way. There's a lit version of not classes where you get it all, but no classes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not one of the Polymer projects things, but there's a guy who like I'm Twitter friends with now because of the web components ecosystem. His name's Matthew Phillips, and he made this project called Haunted, which is essentially hooks for web components in lit HTML. So you just write a function that returns a lit HTML result, and you can use hooks inside there. I can't remember if I mentioned this point earlier, but you know, one of the things about web components is that like how you implement them is not the same as how you use them. You know, this encapsulation boundary means that you can implement them imperatively or functionally and use them, you know, declaratively or however. So it's nice that there's these options. You can use Haunted to implement like fully functional web components and then vend those to people who are using them in a different way. We might look at hooks as something official and lit element. But, you know, honestly, I think the class, you know, hate sometimes comes from misusing classes. I think we saw the same thing with mixins. I'm a huge mixin proponent, but my definition of mixin, I think, is a little different than what most people are used to. You know, I think a mixin is like a subclass factory. You give me a superclass, I'll give you a new subclass of it, and then you can use that with some added behavior. I think classes sometimes are a bit misused. Like if you look at, you know, things where you know, React is moving to hooks, their use of classes is a little weird because they put all their state in this, like, this.state and this.props. And they can sometimes change that state from underneath you. And if you define just like a field on the class, I don't think that's really idiomatic in React. What you really want to do is write something into state. So when you write a class there, it's really not like a plain class with fields and getters and you know, that you would store your state in. So I sometimes wonder if, you know, sometimes there's like a problem that's created and then a solution just solve that problem, where if you just went back to very plain classes, if it would be, you know, more understandable. Again, though, we try to give everybody like all the options. So we'll probably, you know, do something that lets them be more purely functional. Mm-hmm.
And just to maybe we could end with this, because it's probably on people's mind to some degree, is like, I can write a native web component and in React, like in my JSX, I could have a native web component. It seems like not super common, but it's doable, isn't it? Like, wouldn't that be a kind of a nice way to be like, oh, I really liked this .set state. That's a nice API and it renders stuff nicely. But I also like kind of baby stepping my way towards web components, because then that feels native too. Like, is it really just like never the twain shall meet, or is there some success stories of people like using one of the big libraries with web components, or even with Lit?
Yeah, one of the biggest success stories, I would say, in terms of building that bridge, has been Skate.js. So Skate.js is a library that provides you like the web component kind of structure and the helpers. But it doesn't quite have an opinion on like what you should use to render DOM. So they have these adapters, or I think they call them renderers, for different libraries. There's a React renderer, a Preact renderer, a Lit HTML renderer, and maybe some more. And so the idea there is you can use React to implement the guts of your web component. And that has more familiar concepts like props and state. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine on the implementation side. The only thing I would like recommend if people do that is to think about how people consume their element, right? Most native elements in the DOM, they have their own properties, and they don't have like a, you know, state bag that you're supposed to set things in, or props back, right? Mm-hmm. Like an input has a value property, right? That's a simple API to use from the outside. So you don't tell people to call set props on input with a value key, right? So, you know, again, in looking at things from the implementation side being different from the usage side, I would just say, like, try to make on the usage side things look like plain elements as much as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sure I'm just a little off base. Like, the fact that so few people are doing it probably is meaningful.
No, I'm excited. I was poking around this Haunted, and it looks like it's a pretty cool way to get feels like a, like, can I say it? Like a 4 kilobyte React or something. It feels kind of good. But you know, there's a lot of other things involved there. For people who, can I roll out Lit Element today and ship products, and would you recommend people doing that, or does it need to get a little closer to final or something?
No, absolutely. I should have mentioned at the beginning is that week before last, or was it last week? It's early in the year. I'm forgetting my dates. We actually launched Lit HTML 1.0 and Lit Element 2.0. And these are the first stable releases of both. We had to do Lit Element 2.0 because we got the NPM name from somebody who had done 1.0 already. So they're already used in production. Even in the pre-release form, we had people from SAP and Williams-Sonoma and ING, a lot of banks, Nordea and Rabobank and BBVA, British Gas, like a bunch of enterprises reached out to say, hey, we're using Lit Element and it's really successful for us. So you can use it now. It seems to be especially popular with companies that have lots of projects and they want to make a common design system across those projects. And the projects are using Angular and Vue and React and whatnot. So they can implement one library and use them all over the place.
Oh, well, well, there you go. All right. Well, thank you, Justin, for coming on. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
Well, I get paid already, so I don't need money. But you can follow me on Twitter. Justin Fagnani is my handle. That's Fagnani, because you'll never spell it if I don't for you.
I put four or five vowels in there. I apologize.
It's quite all right. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. On GitHub, we have projects that you can look at and watch. And yeah, I give talks occasionally. But you know, hopefully, just you know, check out lit.html and lit.element, and then see if you like it.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. A little bit of housekeeping. I think we said it. We disappeared from some podcatchers. We should all be back online. If you heard this, that's a good sign. But tell your friends. Everything's okay now. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs.
Some good ones on there.
People want to hire people like you. Yeah, it's kind of booming, isn't it?
It is.
All right, Chris, you got anything else you'd like to see?
Shoptalkshow.com. Bye-bye.